Welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 213th edition of Assembly Call Radio and our 712th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of May 20th, 2021. I'm your host, Andy Bottoms. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Martin takes a shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
Well, tonight's banner moment is around the IU soccer team, and in honor of our guest here, this has been deemed a no Spurs zone, so we'll not be hitting on them at all during the show, but did want to talk about the IU men's soccer team, who made it to their 16th national title game. They've won eight. They came up short on Monday night, had a really exciting victory over Pitt on Friday night, I believe it was, with Herbert Enderle scoring a goal with about 10 minutes left in that one. And even though they did come up short, lost in overtime to Marshall, for those who may have missed the game, lost 1-0, had a number of just great defensive plays. Celentano was fabulous in goal. And really kudos to Todd Yeagley and the team for advancing as far as they did, especially after Spencer Glass got hurt in the Michigan game. Still moved some things around, persevered. And really, if you look ahead to next year, kind of an odd offseason with the sport being played in the spring this year instead of the fall. But if you look at the composition of the roster, there's no reason to believe that most of these guys won't be back. So you have to believe that they'll be contending once again for the national title. And, kind of what we talk about IU being a blue blood basketball program and all the debate around that and what they are. The soccer program is all that and more, just with the reputation that they've built, with the tradition that they've built. And this year was no exception. So kudos to those guys for making it to the final. And even though they came up short, proud of them and another IU sports team that's really got it rolling, and they have for quite some time. So with that, I'll introduce my esteemed co-host for tonight. Ryan is off, but he'll be back soon with a full scouting report on Indiana's newest player, Michael Durr, who we'll talk a little bit more about later in the show. And Jared may make an appearance later on. But here with us tonight, the ringleader of last week's Tonsoni Takeover episode of the Assembly Call.
He remembers the days when a movie cost a dollar. Heaven help you if you ever decide to pop your collar. Play hard, but remember, fake hustle is a crime. He's the coach and it's Tonsoni time.
Coach, few less family members on this week, but any thoughts on the week in IU basketball, IU sports in general?
Well, the roster just keeps changing, and Coach Woodson is maximizing the transfer portal in changing up the roster. And it tells me a couple things, that this roster was really flawed last year, and that's some of the reasons why they struggled. And then down the stretch, it just got out of control, and they lost an opportunity to have any chance to play in the tournament. But boy, it brings up some questions. I think the new addition was a good piece to back up Trace Jackson Davis. I still am concerned, Andy, about who's going to play the four, and is there enough ability there if Trace Jackson Davis plays a little bit there? Can they stretch the game enough to open up the court, which has been a huge issue for the Indiana Hoosiers for several years? And then, the more I look at the roster, the more I wonder, do we have enough shooting? In college basketball, you need shooters, and you need big guys who can shoot. And I think there needs to be a world of development starting here in June when the summer session, in order for these guys to compete at the highest level. I still think this is a better roster, and we're headed in the right direction, so everything's still good. But there's some roster issues that are starting to come to light the more I study. But happy for Coach Woodson. He's doing what he's doing. He needed a better roster, and he made things happen.
I think after the last few years, Coach, there'll never be a time that IU fans feel comfortable that there's enough shooting on the roster. So I think your concerns are warranted at this point. And also with us, our special guest, a former podcast co-host of mine from way back when. I was trying to think of this tonight. I don't really remember how many years ago this has been, but I feel like my daughter was definitely not in school by any stretch, and she'll be in high school next year. And Rob had no kids at the time when we were together. We were just talking about that before the show, that he's got a couple. So, due in no part whatsoever to the podcast that we did, Rob has gone on to become one of the most respected national voices in college basketball, writes a weekly email newsletter called The Rebound, and founded the Field of 68 Media Network, which, as IU fans should know, features AJ Guyton's House of Hoosier podcast. He is Rob Doster. Rob, welcome to the Assembly Call, and just wanted to get your, we'll get into this a little bit more as we go on in the show, but you know, what are your overarching thoughts from the offseason so far for IU, which has been a pretty busy one?
Well, first and foremost, that was a very kind intro. But I do just want to let you know that, like, at the time when we were hosting that podcast, I did have one child. His name was Troy Macker. He was my son. And I'm gonna quiz you right now. Do you remember, Andy, what we named your daughter on that podcast?
Oh man, I do remember having the discussion. I think this was when my second one was going to be born, that you guys were coming up with stuff. I do not recall. I'm sure it'll come flooding back now though.
It was Dundreakus Bottoms, because there was a guy that played for Ole Miss named Dundreakus Nelson that was our favorite player at the time. So we named your daughter Dundreakus.
I'm gonna have to tell Mallory that she dodged a real bullet with what could have been.
Oh man, she did. What's going on, guys? I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So thoughts on the IU offseason, just at least overarching ones for, you know, kind of a lot of roster change, a lot of coaching staff obviously changed. What have been your impressions so far of what Woodson's been able to do?
The shooting is the big thing for me. I think that's really an important part for what this team is going to end up being next season. You know, I think part of the reason why Iowa was as good as they were last year is because they had so many shooters around Luka Garza. They forced you to make a decision. Are you going to double team him because he can't stop one-on-one? Or are you going to hope that you can at least slow him down, limit him, foul him enough where he goes 6 for 10 from the line, whatever it is, and live and die with Luka Garza post-ups. That's worked in the past. If you double-team him and you let them shoot, that's not something that you want to be able to do. The problem with Indiana is you didn't have to make that decision, right? You never had to say, okay, how are we going to let TJD operate one-on-one when we don't have to worry about three of the four guys that are on the perimeter about making a shot? So adding guys like Miller Kopp and getting someone like a Parker Stewart eligible, and bringing in the I'm blanking on his name, freshman, Tamar Bates. Yeah. I've never seen him play, but I asked Jerry Meyer about him, and he said, quote, accurate deep shooter. So I'm just going to assume that Jerry's right in saying that this guy can shoot. So I think you have pieces here that are going to actually be able to force defenses to make a decision, because that at the end of the day, that's what basketball is all about, right? If you're the offense, you want to force the defense to have to make a decision on how they are going to guard you, and you want to be able to beat them no matter what decision that defense makes. And being able to have guys that can make open shots will force defenses to make that decision. And at the end of the day, you're bringing in guys that at least in the past have been able to shoot before. Now, does that mean they're going to be able to shoot at all this year? You know, Miller Kopp is a guy that had a reputation for being a really big shooter and shot 33% last season when it was all said and done for Northwestern. Parker Stewart is a guy that shot 38% as a freshman at Pitt. And then when he was given a little bit more of a green light, shot 34% for Tennessee Martin in 2020. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have guys that are going to make those shots. But I'm kind of the opinion that the threat of the three is more important than whether or not the three actually goes in. Because the threat of the three is what creates space. And the threat of the three is what forces defense to have to move and adjust and all of that kind of stuff. So I think Mike Woodson has made some good additions. I think that there are going to be some pieces that are already on the roster that will really help them. And you know, like Coach said, an offseason of development, you got a whole summer to get these guys in the gym, get them on the gun, get shots up, develop them, make them a threat. I think that's what you really have to do.
All right. Well, we'll talk more, get Rob's thoughts on the IU offseason later on in the show. But coming up this week, we got Hoosier Headlines, which includes another new player for IU and a new game on the non-conference schedule. Not necessarily one that everybody's going to get super excited about, but at least it's a hint of what's to come. And then, as I said, the main topic, we'll get into Rob's thoughts on IU and the Big Ten at large, and maybe even some of the potential rule changes that are out there. And we'll end by answering your questions, like we always do. And so all of that coming this week on Assembly Call Radio. All right, now we have a new sponsor here on the Assembly Call, which requires me to do something else in the video here, which will likely ruin everything. All right, here we go. We do have a new sponsor, as I said. That's a perfect fit for our show because they want us to talk about balls. but not basketballs. No, they want us to talk about our balls. I will say that rumor has it Coach Tonsoni and his wife have been workshopping some potential ad reads and taglines for this. So we'll leave that for another day. I will take the first one. But, you know, this may be a little awkward at first as we talk about this. But considering our 10th season covering the Hoosiers, I think we built up enough trust to get a little more personal. So support for the Assembly Call is now brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. And Manscaped just launched their fourth-generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0, just in time for Father's Day, which is coming right around the corner in June. And as part of this campaign, Manscaped sent us all the new Lawnmower 4.0, so we've gotten to experience it firsthand. And to put this in bracketology terms, since the Lawnmower features a cutting-edge ceramic blade and advanced skin-safe technology, it reduces Virginia UMBC-like grooming accidents. You can never be too safe when mowing your man lawn. And for the ladies in our audience, don't start tuning out and thinking this ad read isn't for you. It absolutely is, because if you want to give your husband and yourself or your boyfriend, Jared only wrote husband here, come on, the gift of well-shorn and manicured, man, he's really just trying to trip me up here, well-shorn and manicured nether region, then you should consider ordering the Lawnmower 4.0 for Father's Day. So join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped, and we have this exclusive offer for you. You get 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code AC at manscaped.com. That's it. Just go to manscaped.com and add AC and you'll get 20% off your order and free worldwide shipping. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Your balls or the balls of someone you love will thank you. All right. Smooth transition here into Hoosier headlines, where we want to talk about the newest IU player. So Michael Durr comes in as a transfer from South Florida. He was, according to this, a three-star recruit, was ranked around number 300, came from Atlanta. He's a senior. He has 2 years of eligibility, a true seven-footer, played at least 20 minutes a game every season at South Florida. As a junior, averaged 8.8 points per game, 7.9 rebounds per game, and one block per game. His free throw percentage, always a hot-button topic with IU after these last handful of years, has increased over the course of his career from 53.6 to 79%. However, he's only shot 48.9% on twos during his career. So, you know, we had a question from Chris Payne. Is Durr just a big body rebounder and rim protector, or does he have some game? Rob, I'll throw this to you first. I don't know how much South Florida action you took in over the course of the past season, but, you know, how do you view the acquisition of Michael Durr? Is he really just a, you know, a big body rim protector, or is he somebody that you think can earn some minutes given who else IU has up front?
I think that he'll probably end up playing some minutes. In the Big Ten, more than any other conference, size matters, right? And if you look at the teams that have had the most success within the league over recent years, there's always a big body inside, whether it's a Hunter Dickinson or a Kofi Coburn or a Luka Garza or somebody like that. There's always somebody big on the best teams in the Big Ten. And having someone to match up with them, someone that can, you know, keep Trace Jackson Davis out of foul trouble, someone that has a little bit more size than someone like a Race Thompson, I think that's important to have, right? Just to be able to match, even if it's throw them out there for 12 minutes, use four of your fouls, just go beat up on somebody. Having that piece in your arsenal is something that I think matters in the Big Ten. So in that sense, it's an addition that I think will help them, and it makes them better, makes them more matchup proof. And it's something in a league like the Big Ten, having that big guy really matters. Now, is he a world beater? Is he a game changer? Am I all of a sudden putting Indiana in the top 15 of my preseason top 25 because they have Michael Durr on the roster? No, but it helps you match up with teams where you're going to need a big body, and having the ability to match up with everybody that you play is something that's really important. So it's a valuable addition. I do think that he's someone that's going to see some minutes, and I think he's going to help him in certain lineups and certain matchups, but it's, you know, at the end of the day, you're bringing in a guy that averaged 8 points for a pretty bad South Florida team.
Yeah, Coach, what are your thoughts on that? I know there were post-game shows last year where we would come on and say this would have been a decent game, a good game to have Joey Brunk healthy, just to do some of the things that Rob said, you know, give you some fouls, give you a little bit of toughness, give Trace a break, do some of those things. Do you think Durr is kind of a replacement for, you know, that kind of role on the team that we maybe talked about Brunk needing to serve last year when he was out with an injury?
I absolutely agree, and I agree with Rob. It's a guy to come in and spell Trace Jackson Davis. You know, if he picks up that first foul, you have a big guy. Last year, it went to Race Thompson without Joey Brunk, and Race can play the five, but I think Coach Woodson really wants to stretch his game and play him some at the four, and it gives us depth that Joey Brunk would have given us if he would have stayed. But Logan Duncan is coming in too, and I thought that role was going to be his. But it also now gives that freshman a chance to get in the weight room, learn the game, and not have to have major, major minutes unless he comes in and earns them early. He can take his time getting used to the college game, and you have a seven-footer who's played 20 minutes a game and can come in and do that. My concern is that I'd like to see Trace Jackson Davis stay at the five for Indiana basketball to be successful. I know Trace Jackson Davis needs to play facing the basket and shoot more from the outside to advance his professional abilities. I'm not sure that's the best fit for IU as you put the seven-footer down low and TJD outside, because, again, give him a year of development. Maybe it'll be there, but you're going to have that clogged up lane again and a lack of threat. And that's my biggest concern, is the shooting from the four spot and the loss of Jerome Hunter. He was that guy that could come in and knock down that three every once in a while from that four spot if they played a little small. And I'm an advocate of guards, guards, guards. And I know, Rob, I agree with you. You need big guys in the Big Ten. But I love guards and I love shooting. And I think our fours, if they're going to be big, need to be able to shoot. And so I think it's an overall plus. It's a good move for Indiana. But again, I don't think it, again, elevates, as Rob said, Indiana to that discussion of you know, top four seed in a tournament type discussion.
Yeah, I don't think you want him playing more than 10 or 12 minutes. I think it's a very natural specific thing where you can steal some minutes here and there. You can use a bunch of fouls. It just gives you a little bit of size if you're getting beaten up on the glass to kind of, you know, get back into the game a little bit. But I'm with you 100%. Like, if there's a dream lineup that you can have with this Indiana team, is you put four shooters on the floor and you constantly get TJD in ball screens, and you allow him to have situations where he can either face up against bigger defenders or other fives, or you can have him roll into the basket on a switch, post him up against a smaller defender, and then you're dead. I mean, if you have a guard on TJD with four shooters around him, I mean, you're either getting an open three or you're getting a dunk, right? So that, to me, that's the dream lineup. I don't know if they necessarily have the pieces to be able to do that this season, but I think they're a lot closer now than they were before Mike Woodson got there and started bringing in a couple of these other pieces.
The other thing that the Durer transfer does is it gives you a guy for 2 years. So once, mm-hmm. you know, we presume TJD is going to leave, then he'll be a senior and you'll have two really big solid centers in Logan Duncan and Durer to continue. And so a lot of times as coaches, not only are you worried about next year's roster, but you got to plan out 2 or 3 years. And that's really hard with the transfer portal and the NBA, but you got to try to do your best. And Indiana's got some nice freshmen that need time to develop their game. And by the time they're juniors, will be really good basketball players. We've seen Villanova do that. We've seen Wisconsin do that. Guys that hardly play their first year, second year, all of a sudden a Kaminsky blossoms. And I'm not saying any of our guys are that level, but sometimes out of nowhere, these kids come here. And if you can convince kids to stay, if they're not getting minutes, I think this roster is well designed to get Indiana back in the tournament and competitive in the Big Ten.
And you never know those. You never know where that development is going to come from, right? Like, Frank Kaminsky was a three-star prospect that no one really wanted coming out of high school. He gets to Wisconsin, he does his 2 years, he develops, and all of a sudden, boom, you got yourself a top 10 pick and an All-American. Now, I don't know if, say, Christian Lander is ever going to end up being that good, but if you can get him a couple more years in the program, right, and a couple years where he doesn't quite have the expectations that you have as a five-star kid coming into Indiana to take over the point as a 17-year-old, then I think you're doing something well there, right? I think having that pressure off of him might actually help a little bit. So I think I feel better about this Indiana team than a lot of people do. And I mean, we'll see what ends up happening with it. But my take has always been, like, I'm not worried about Mike Woodson's ability to coach basketball, right? The thing that I was worried about with him is, like, he hasn't been on a college campus for 4 decades. Like, he hasn't been on a college campus while I've been alive. And coming back and dealing with all the stuff that you have to deal with as a college basketball head coach at the University of Indiana, right? Like, it's very
– Just correct yourself now and say Indiana University.
People are going
to – I'm just trying to keep you from people from getting angry at you.
hey, blame the beer, not me. All right. So, but it's very different being just a basketball coach in the NBA versus what you have to do as the head coach of a Division I program in the Big Ten, right? Especially one with the history that Indiana has. So I was never worried about what he could do once you actually get him on the floor. It's all the other stuff. And it seems like he's kind of figured it out. I mean, he's already in the transfer portal, right? And that's the first step. He got Christian Lander back from the transfer portal, right? He got Trace Jackson Davis back from draft. So I think he's starting to figure it out a little bit. And again, like the basketball part, I think is going to figure itself out. I mean, that man got Atlanta, the Atlanta Hawks into the playoffs. He won 54 games with the New York Knicks. Nobody does that, right? So I'm not worried about the basketball part. It's everything else.
All right. So the other bit of news that came out this week was on the scheduling front. It looks like IU has added Merrimack to its non-conference schedule. It'll be their third year in Division One. They actually beat Northwestern in their first year in D1. Torvik has them 157th. I don't want to get into anything specifically about Merrimack, but Rob, I just kind of wanted to just curious what you're kind of hearing from coaches and others of what the non-conference scheduling process looks like for this year. Obviously, last year was just a mess. In some ways brought about some good things in terms of teams being able to not have to worry about scheduling games 2 years out, doing whatever. Like, you could got some pretty good games that got set up on the fly. I think everybody expects from a fan perspective a lot of things to be different this year. So based on what you're hearing, should we expect non-conference scheduling to be pretty similar to what it was, you know, pre-last season? Or do you think there's some holdover effect or some of the things that worked well last year at times that those may become more permanent parts of what's going on?
I think it's going to be more or less back to normal. You know, we're already starting to see, like, the Knicks are going to have 15,000 people in Madison Square Garden when they play on, Saturday, their first game of the season. So if the New York Knicks are able to sell out to 75% capacity at an NBA arena, I got to imagine in another 6 months, college campuses are going to be able to allow pretty close to full capacity, hopefully, right? So I do think that we're going to be close to normal in terms of what the atmosphere is like, what the actual scheduling is like. I mean, I hope that teams have kind of learned that there is a lot of value in testing yourself early in the season and giving yourself a chance to play some of these big marquee non-conference games and being able to say, hey, you know what? We have, in an ideal world, Indiana playing Kentucky again. Right? Something like that. So I hope teams figured that out and saw that, like, Baylor testing themselves throughout the non-conference schedule, beat everybody, ended up winning a national title. Gonzaga testing themselves throughout the entire non-conference schedule, beat everybody, made it to the national title game undefeated. So if you're good enough, just go out and play people. If you're not good enough, do it. You got to figure it out somehow. Right? So I'm hoping that it'll be something where we don't see as many of these bye games, and we don't necessarily see some of the Indiana non-conference schedules that we've seen in the past. And by the way, you know, you're kind of burying the lead on this Merrimack game. It's the Miller Cop revenge game. How can you just gloss over that fact?
So when you think about, I guess when you think about this IU team, so you talked about what IU's non-conference schedules have been in the past. Like, if you're Mike Woodson coming into this situation, like, what do you want your non-conference schedule to look like? They've got, you know, they're locked into the Big Ten ACC. They are, I think, due to play in the Gavitt games this year, although I'm not sure how last year kind of impacted a lot of that. So that's a potential. They got Notre Dame in the Crossroads, which people have different opinions about the value of that. But that's really all that we know at this point outside of the Merrimack game. So if you're Woodson, how do you try to set the schedule up for success, but also testing these guys that where you got a lot of new faces and you're trying to integrate not only your own new system, but a lot of new guys with some old guys as well.
Do they have are they in an MTE tournament?
Not that I saw. I looked a little bit before the show. They're not signed up for one that I have seen at this point. And I know most of those have kind of come out with who their fields are. So it doesn't look like it, at least not one of the major ones at the very least.
I'm assuming they're probably going to end up being in one, because I don't think that you can be Indiana and not be in one. But the trouble that they run into, and you know, I've seen Duke has said some things about this in the past, and Coach Cal has talked about it. When you get a lot of these kind of marquee matchups, that eats up a lot of your non-conference schedule. And I'm not sure specifically what it is at Indiana, but I do know that there are places where the athletic director says to their head coach, we need this number of home games during the non-conference schedule so we can complete our season ticket package, right? So if you're only playing, the Big Ten plays, what, 20 games? So you got 10 home games there. Let's say that they require you to have 16 home games during the season to be able to fill out your season ticket package, right? Well, if you're playing the Big Ten ACC Challenge on the road and you got the Gavitt games on the road and you got the Crossroad Classics, which is the neutral, and you got these other non-conference games, let's say that they play two games in like the Jimmy V or something. I just throw it out there. All of a sudden, that's five of your 11 non-conference games right there. And if you need to get to 16 home games, then you're going to have to play all your other games at home, right? So if you can't get, like a SEC team to come in or something like that, if you can't get another Big East team to come in and play you, then you're looking at just bye games. And the schedule kind of has their hand forced. So what we really need to make college basketball's non-conference season as good as it can possibly be is more of these power conference teams to just kind of bite the bullet and say, you know what, we have to play some series against other power conference teams in our area. Like, I mean, it's completely off topic, but there's absolutely no reason that we can't get Indiana, Kentucky, and Louisville to play some kind of round robin. It makes too much sense. There's too many fans that are all kind of intermingled in that part of the country. And getting those rivalries back going again is something that I think would be really important and really good and create some buzz at a point in time when everyone's all paying attention to, NBA offseason stuff and football, college football, NFL. So being able to generate that buzz for college basketball at that point in the year, I think is really, really important for the sport overall. It just kind of, it's tough to do once you understand how all of this stuff works in the nitty gritty.
The other aspect of that from my perspective here is you also want to play a couple of games where you're going to be able to try some stuff and get some stuff on film early so that when you go up against the bigger, so I'm a firm believer in 11. If you have 11 non-conference games, you need to play at least a minimum of five of real tough competition, if not six or seven. You got to have three, four games to, you know, get your ninth, 10th guy some minutes in there, get it on film, try your stuff out, and build some confidence. I think that Indiana's schedule last year kind of hurt them, not making any excuses, because they were big school after big school after big school with no chance just to get right. I think there needs to be a couple get right games early in the season because the Big Ten's a gauntlet. And then so I'd like to see six of the 11, whether it's Gavitt games, whatever you're required to do, or the tournaments, get six against really good competition. And then, you know, five other ones where you level them off. And you can get some 100, 200 KenPom teams in here. You don't have to go all the way down to 353 like we did for six, seven, you know. Games a year, but
the Tom Crean Southland SWAC right special, is that what you're referring to? Where
but that's how I'm looking from it. If I could design it, if I was the head coach, if I was Coach Woodson, give me six that we really want to test ourselves, but then I need five kind of get right games to get the team moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta have something where when you have a new head coach, you can you get a chance to go up against real competition in a real game, in a setting with fans, in a setting with referees, in a setting where you're on TV, where you have to run your stuff and figure it out, right? You need all of that. You need this stuff on film so that Woody can go back and he can watch it and say, this is what you're not doing right. Like, you need all of that. I totally get it. You want to play two games at the start of your season against teams that have literally no chance of beating you. I get that. Yeah, you probably should do it. And again, the confidence thing, these people are human. They're not robots. At some point, you have to be able to get them to the point where they're believing in themselves. And for me, like, confidence is probably 75% of success in basketball, right? So I understand that. And yes, you need some easy games to start it off. It's just, you don't need to play nine games against teams ranked outside the top 200 in KenPom. It's just completely unnecessary,
Rob. Unless you're Gonzaga and your conference isn't very good, then you need to, then you need to load up so that you get that one seed, which they get all the time anyway because they got all the best recruits right now. But you know, it's. I think it matters too in conferences. If you have a conference that's 50-50 and you got some get right games within the conference, the Big Ten in the last few years hasn't had that, so that comes into play as a Big Ten coach as well. As man, it's 20. Just gruesome games. What do we do in that? You know, it's a little bit interesting in that aspect.
Well, the good news for Indiana is this year, at least Nebraska and Minnesota are still going to be in the Big Ten. So at least you got that.
True. All right. Well, coming up on the assembly call, we're going to pick Rob's brain on IU and the Big Ten and how he sees things stacking up there and what he thinks about some of the proposed rule changes. So all that and more coming up on the assembly call. Stick with us.
We could all use a real vacation right about now. Lucky for us, Princess Cruises has a port right here in SF. Starting at $99 per day, Princess can take you to the beaches of Mexico, the tropics of Hawaii, the glaciers of Alaska, or along the California coast. That's right, just $99 per day. Set sail with California's cruise line. Call 1-800-PRINCESS, visit princess.com, or contact your travel advisor today. Terms and restrictions apply. Promotional pricing ends November 30th, 2021. Ships are Bermudan and British Registry. Before booking, consult the CDC website at www.cdc.gov.
Hear that? That's the sound of someone trying to steal your crypto. Every day, thousands of hackers online are doing the same. That's why Arculus uses air-gapped cold storage technology to protect your assets. Using our keycard and wallet app to form a protective barrier, Arculus insulates you from hackers and puts control of your digital assets back in your hands. Order the first truly air-gapped crypto wallet at getarculus.com.
All right, welcome everybody in the chat mob. I'm going to probably keep the between segment stuff pretty short. One, it's been a long week. Two, try to be respectful of Rob's time as best I can. Rob, what are we drinking tonight?
Firestone Propagator. I don't really know what it is, but I'm a big Firestone guy. And they had like one of the IPA mixer packs at my beer store. So okay. I was like, huh, all right, let's see what happens.
What could go wrong? Yeah, I was going to say, if it's a brewery, you can't really go wrong.
I give it a C+. I give it a C+, for the record.
All right.
It's not all great. Right, good. I've had better.
good for people to know. All right. All right. I'm just going to go ahead and roll into the next segment. But this is just mostly IU and Big Ten stuff, Rob. So we'll just kind of hit. I mean, there's questions in here, but we'll hit whatever. We'll kind of go whatever direction we need to as we go.
Hey guys, it's Gene Steratore, CBS officiating analyst and retired Big Ten basketball official. You know, I have never listened to the assembly call, and to be honest, I don't intend to. But if you listen, make sure you ignore anything Ryan says about officiating. He's really good from the seat of his pants, but I wouldn't trust him on the court with a whistle around his neck. Time has proven him wrong on virtually everything. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Welcome back to the assembly call. Always a good one with the Gene Steratore intro. So how do you keep up with the fire hose of information that comes out almost every day about IU basketball? It's crazy during the offseason and even crazier during the season. Well, we've got your back. We send out a free weekly email newsletter on Sunday mornings. It rounds up the most important and interesting IU basketball stories from the previous week to help keep you up to date on your Hoosiers. Over 8,000 of your fellow IU fans are already on the list, and we want you to be on there as well. So go to join.assemblycall.com to join for free now. That's join.assemblycall.com. You can also text IU to 66866. Again, that's IU to 66866. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Coach Brian Tonsoni and our special guest, Rob Doster. And I wanted to dig a little bit deeper on some of Rob's thoughts on both what IU has done and then the Big Ten at large here. So, you know, Rob, you mentioned this a little bit in the opening just about how, you know, Woodson seemed to be kind of figuring things out from the transition to college basketball. And one of the things that IU fans have really thought has aided in that, I don't know if there's a way to know if this is true or not, but kind of how they've set up the college basketball staff, whether that be with, you know, Thad Matta or bringing in Dane Fife as a guy with experience within the conference and experience at IU. And then Yasir Rosemond's got a little bit different background there as well as assistant coaching, player development stuff. I mean, what have been your impressions of the way IU's assembled the staff and what it feels like the overarching plan really is to help make Woodson successful?
Well, I thought bringing in Thad Matta was really sharp to kind of help with the day-to-day stuff that doesn't necessarily deal with being on the court. My understanding is that he's not going to be necessarily as involved as a lot of people thought he would be the second that hire was made. But just having him there as someone that you can bounce ideas off of, having him there to just be another voice, another sounding board, you know, he's going to watch the games. You know, if you're a basketball coach and a basketball junkie, you're always going to watch the game. So getting Fife, it kills me to say something nice about Fife, but bringing him in, I think, was important. Just another member of the Indiana family, you know, try to reconnect with a lot of these people. I thought he hired a good staff. You know, there's not really anything that I can say to complain about it too much. The key is going to be, I think we saw it with Juwan Howard at Michigan, right? And I think that's the kind of an apt comparison in the sense that both of these guys have strong coaching resumes from the NBA level. That came to college to coach their alma mater, which maybe wasn't always going to be the most seamless fit. What Juwan did was he hired a staff where he had some guys that could recruit. He had some guys that were connected to the Michigan family. And he brought in someone like a Phil Martelli that had spent however many years as a head coach at St. Joe's. Like, I don't know if there's anybody in the college basketball space that understands like what it takes to be a college basketball head coach more than someone like a Phil Martelli. So Mike Woodson doing that with Thad Matta, bringing that guy in, having some of these guys that the part of the Indiana family, Fife, like I mentioned, got some recruiters. So, I mean, he did what he needed to do. I think he got the right advice. So I'm not saying that he's going to end up being quite the home run that Juwan Howard is. I would never, if you make that prediction, I mean, Juwan's been awesome, right? Like he was in the conversation for National Coach of the Year, the number one seed, maybe even a team that could have won the national title if they hadn't lost Isaiah Livers. Predicting that for Mike Woodson, I think would just be creating a level of expectations that is just way, way too high. But I mean, it's on the right track. You know, there's nothing I can sit here and poke holes in and say, this was dumb, that was dumb, this was dumb, that was dumb. So I think they're turning in the right direction. And if I was an Indiana fan, I would feel optimistic about what this team was going to be heading into next season, knowing that even the most bullish person on the program would probably say they're what, like the seventh best team heading into the Big Ten next season.
I'm sure there are people who would rank them higher. I don't know that I've looked enough to see at the. I know Jared for one would rank them higher, but I haven't. I don't think I've looked enough to know where the merry-go-round has stopped and who's still on what rosters at this point to offer a strong prediction. But I think there are people who believe they can be in the top five.
They can. I mean, they can get there. They can absolutely get there because, like, let's say E.J. Liddell doesn't come back, and let's say Hunter Dickinson doesn't end up coming back, and it just never clicks with all these new faces at Michigan State and all of this other stuff goes on. Like, when you have a guy like Trace Jackson Davis, like, he can win you games by himself. Now, am I going to sit here and predict all of those things happening? Probably not, but there's a very real possibility that Indiana could end up being a top four team. Like, if all of these shooters end up working out, and if Christian Lander figures it out in his second year on campus, and Trace Jackson Davis ends up being this year's Luka Garza, right? The pieces are there, but let's say that the shooting doesn't come around. You never actually find a guy that can play the point, and it's just Trace Jackson Davis going up against double teams over and over and over again. I think that there's a very real world where Indiana can also finish 10th. So it's a place where they're trending in the right direction. It's not going to happen overnight, right? Like, you're not going to go from what they were last season to what Indiana was in the prime of Bob Knight's coaching tenure. That's not going to happen overnight. You're going to have to rebuild this, and it's going to be a process, and it's going to take a couple years. But based off of what they've done in the last 2 months, I mean, it's hard not to say that they're heading in the right direction, at least compared to where they were last year, which was about as close to rock bottom as you can get if you're not in the Tom Crean era.
Phil Martelli, you bring him up. What a great guy. I've seen him in many conferences and clinics, and I've stolen a lot when I was coaching about how he'd run his practice. I just think, you know, he's fantastic for those out there listening in the chat mob. But I think what's really been impressive to me, Rob, is the fact that Coach Woodson's willing to collaborate. And that's that NBA kind of mindset that he's going to listen to Thad Matta when he needs Thad Mata's advice. He wasn't afraid to bring in Dane Fife, who outwardly said he wanted the job and didn't get it. And he wasn't afraid to do that. And I just think that's a really great leadership that's going to maximize things over time for however long Coach Woodson's here. That's what's been so impressive to me is that he knows the things that he's not prepared to do being an NBA guy coming in there, and he's okay with not knowing, but he's going to get guys out there that help him because his sole reason for coming back is wanting to get this thing back. So that's what's impressed me the most about Coach Woodson and all of his hires.
Yeah. And I think he also didn't hire yes men, right? Like, you want people that are going to push back on you. You know, Phil Martelli's not a yes man like that. He's an opinionated Italian from the East Coast. Like he's going to say what he thinks. And having that kind of person on staff is something that's good for somebody that's coming into their first year. And it's also a way. I mean, it's this kind of idea of groupthink, right? Like if everybody is kind of saying the same thing and thinking along the same lines, you kind of are naturally going to head in one direction, whether or not that is the best direction that you can go in. Different varying opinions, as long as everyone can accept you decide to go one way and get behind it, having those people that you can bounce things off of, I think is important. And you know, Thad Mata, like he doesn't strike me as a yes man. Dane Fife is not going to end up being a yes man. So I think that having some of these people on staff, Kenya Hunter is not going to end up being a yes man. So having these people on staff that will push back on some of the things that Mike Woodson wants to do, I think is important.
So as you look at the roster with all the, you know, the new faces, you've already got a new system. So maybe that this is minimized. Maybe that's ultimately the question. But as you look at integrating these different pieces, whether it's Xavier Johnson at the point, Miller Kopp, you know, Parker Stewart was at least around the program last year. Some of those guys, you know, how do you think those pieces fit together? And I guess, you know, kind of where I was going in the beginning was, does that stuff matter when you got a whole new system coming in anyway? It really doesn't matter who's already been here. Like where do you kind of come down on that side of the argument as well?
I mean, I think it does matter that there are people that are there that just kind of understand like what Indiana basketball is about and kind of understand how it's going to work within just kind of some of the day-to-day stuff of being a student there. But you're right. It's going to be a new staff. It's going to be a new system. It's going to be a new style of play. Hopefully it's going to be something where you can kind of space the floor a little bit more and you can kind of see some of the talent of the guys that are on the perimeter get showcased a little bit. But I mean, I think Coach hit the nail on the head at the open. The big key is going to be like what happens at the four spot, right? Like there are options at the point, and there are going to be options at the two and the three, and there's going to be options for all of those wing pieces. Like when you have four or five guys that are going to be fighting for three spots, there's a lot that kind of competitiveness in practice, I think, brings out the best in the team. But I mean, where's the small ball four, right? Like, are you going to play two bigs again? I don't think playing two bigs is going to be something that works long term. Like, there's a reason why the Big Ten had as many struggles as they did when they got to the NCAA tournament. And that's because the style of play that every other league in basketball on this planet plays is one where you have one big guy and or zero big guys, right? You space the floor, pace and space, all this other kind of stuff. In the Big Ten, everybody's got a Luka Garza. Everybody's got a Hunter Dickinson. Everybody's got a Trace Jackson. Everyone's got a big body in the paint, and you got to play with two bigs. And I think we saw some of those matchups get exposed when we got to the NCAA tournament. Like, take Maryland, for example, right? They didn't really have any stars on that roster, but they were really, really competitive because what they did was they had five guys that were 6'7" that wanted to defend. They switched everything. They made it really difficult to run offense against them, and it created matchup problems, and they won a bunch of games that they probably shouldn't have won based off the talent that they had on the roster. And I don't know. Indiana's got guys that can space the floor a little bit, but just having that 6'7" dude that can do the things that like OG and Anobi could do. Right, having a guy that can do some of those things
is just
so important. Yes, a livers. Like guys like that are just so important to modern basketball. And I don't know where that's coming from on this Indiana roster. So I see a lot of situations where you're going to have four guards or two bigs on the floor, and that can work at times. But take Illinois last year, right? Their big issue was that they ran into a situation where they either had four guards or they had to play Kofi and Georgie at the same time. They didn't really have that guy at the four. And once they ended up facing a really well-coached, really well-drilled, really good Loyola team, they got their butts whooped in the NCAA tournament. And when you have two guys that are first team all Big Ten caliber like they did, and you end up getting whooped like that in the tournament by a team from the Valley, that kind of tells you how important it is to be able to have that guy that can create those matchups.
Rob, here's where this plays out for Indiana. A couple years ago, I was at the Illinois game covering it for Delphi Bracketology, the Indiana IU game. They didn't guard Race Thompson at the three. So they sloughed off and had his man just stay into the old dotted line and basically double team Trace Jackson Davis. So here's my strategy if I'm playing IU. Right now we have three potential point guards or got ball handlers, and they all didn't shoot the three well last year: Xavier Johnson, Rob Finnessy, and Lander. I would play under screens, forcing them to hit threes. I'd go under ball screens. I would play off them, playing for the drive, not the shot, until they prove they could hit it. I'd lock up on you know, Bates, Kopp, Stewart on the outside, and then I'd leave that other post player sitting in the middle of the lane until Indiana shows that they can hit from the one or the four from deep. And that's the problem Indiana's had, guys, for 4 or 5 years. Even when they had Romeo and Juwan Morgan, those guys had to score in the lane at that time. And if you only can score in the lane, you can take stuff – you can move your defenders and keep those defenders. So I think you could put three defenders in the lane against IU and lock up on two shooters right now. That's why the point guard needs to develop a three-point shot, and that's why I am so concerned about Geronimo and Race Thompson at the four. They're going to need to have that threat. That's the best thing you said, Rob, too. Maybe not make them, but the scouting report says get out on them because they can make them at least be a threat in the offensive scheme and their skill. And that's just something that's got to be developed, and that's what I'm going to be watching for at the beginning. If they get that, then Trace Jackson Davis is going to, you know, either we're going to hit a lot of threes because they're doubling, or Trace Jackson Davis is going to score 30 points if they go single coverage on them. And that's going to be the difference between a top four Indiana Big Ten team and a team that's struggling to get into the tournament.
Totally agree. Totally agree. I mean, it's the threat. It's the defense having to move and having to be adjusted because of the gravity that these shooters have. Like that's all it is. It's not whether or not you make the shots. It's what the pressure you put on the defense, but the threat of having that guy be able to make that shot. That's what it all comes down to. And look, again, I really do think that all it's going to take is like 33% three-point shooting from someone like a Christian Lander, you know, 33% three-point shooting from someone like a Rob Fantasy, where you're good enough that defenses can't just play at the foul line off you. I don't know if Race Thompson is wrong. Like, those guys kind of are what they are, and shooting is not the thing that they do well, and that's fine. But it's going to create issues for Trace Jackson Davis inside.
Can you stretch from 15 feet at that four or the five spot? I've heard some conversation in coaching circles that all you need if you're going to play two bigs is the ability to hit an elbow jumper or pick and pop to 15 or a baseline jumper in order to space the floor. Your thoughts on that? I'm a firm believer in get your butt back behind the three-point line and let it fly. You know, four around one is my philosophy. But I've heard some talk that if Trace Jackson Davis can hit from 15, if Race can hit from 15, that might stretch the floor as well. Your thoughts?
It's better than not being able to shoot it, but if you're only pulling your defender out to the dotted line, to like the Big Ten logo in the lane, like it's one slide and you're in a position to take a charge.
Agree.
Right? The value of having the reason why you see so much space in the NBA is because that 3-point line is 23 feet away from the rim, and defenses it's not possible to go from being able to defend a shooter to being able to get to a spot where you could take a charge or block a shot with how athletic and how quick NBA guards are, right? It's that spacing that matters. There's a reason why there's so much more space in the NBA game, because you have to guard guys out that far. If you're only guarding them out to 15 feet, like it's one slide. Yeah, and you're going up against guys. Like, and the other part of it is in the college game, you can kind of body somebody and make it difficult for them to drive. You know, in the NBA game, you can't – if someone is driving, you can't get in front of them. You can't body them. You can't change the direction of their drive. Otherwise, that's a foul. You can do that in the college game. And that makes it that much more difficult to just kind of square somebody up and beat them off of one bounce. So to answer your question, it's better than nothing, but you want them shooting threes to be able to really create that space.
So, Rob, as you look at the Big Ten in general, you know, how do you kind of see – who do you view as the top teams? I think the consensus for most would be, again, there's still roster things to work out, some combination of Michigan, Ohio State, Purdue. I think you got Maryland in there with the Wahab transfer, Fats Russell, dependent upon your opinion of Fats Russell. But, you know, kind of how do you see at least the top of the Big Ten shaking out based on what we know right now at least?
I mean, it's those three, and you know, the details are going to kind of get figured out a little bit. Like, is EJ Liddell, is he going to end up coming back? Like, is he going to go pro? Dwayne, why am I blanking on his name?
Washington.
Dwayne Washington. Like, is he going to end up being back? You know, there's a lot of questions. Hunter Dickinson is another guy. There's a lot of questions like that. Like, how good is Devontae Jones going to be at the point for Michigan next year? But like, I mean, look, Ohio State and Michigan are going to be really, really good. I think Purdue is going to end up being a top 5 to 10 team next season. Jaden Ivey is going to be the breakout player in college basketball next year. Like he's going to be that guy, I think, that goes from being kind of overlooked, but like loved in his conference by people that love the Big Ten, to being like a huge national name next season. Like I just think that he's great. Trevion is, you know, assuming he comes back, like that dude, he got in shape and now he's awesome again. So I know I probably shouldn't be saying that on an Indiana podcast, but I think those three are going to be the big three. Once you get beyond that, though, like who are you really scared of on this Michigan State team next season, right? Is there any reason why you can look at that roster and say, okay, they are definitively better than than the best case scenario for Indiana? And I don't think you can. Same thing with, like, you know, Maryland got Fats Russell and Kudus Wahab. Those guys match up pretty well with Indiana. It's going to be the same kind of a thing where you just got that big body inside, right? And you got to figure out what you're doing with the shooting. Now, I think there's more proven shooters and definitely a better proven point guard for Maryland than what I think you're going to see with Indiana this year. But again, like, best case scenario for Indiana is probably just as good, if not better, than best case scenario for Maryland. So once you get outside of that top three, I think it's I don't want to say it's anybody's game, because there are a lot of teams at the bottom of that league that are going to be bad, but Indiana can definitely get out there and be a top four team. And look, if you got fans in Assembly Hall again, then all of a sudden, like, you could beat anybody in that building when it gets rocking. So,
Coach, you have any thoughts? I don't know if you guys have done any more digging in from an early season bracketology perspective, but what's your thoughts on kind of the Big Ten hierarchy?
I couldn't even tell you.
You're not doing that as final exams at school? I mean, you're not throwing that out there? That's too bad.
I got to do some recruiting. We graduate some seniors that were really good in doing that. No, I couldn't even tell you who we put in our way too early tournament. But I think realistically for me, Indiana 5-6-7 is where I think their talent lies, and you catch breaks and certain things like that, maybe pop into the top four. I will be disappointed if they're 8-9-10. I think that'll be a disappointment for the momentum that's been going on now, and the roster being better in theory. It's got to be better in developing and then getting it done on game. But that's where I think Indiana is. And I think they'll be competitive with the top teams as well. I'm not afraid of going and playing a Purdue or Ohio State or Michigan, but you just got to be on top of your game. Those are obviously the best teams out there. So that's where I see in Indiana, and it is a process. Anytime you take over a program at whatever level, you know, our high school program is in its fourth year that where I'm assisting now is, and we won 6 games the first year and then 17 the last 2 years. It just takes time to get your guys in and develop them. And we need to afford the appropriate amount of patience with Coach Woodson.
Yeah. The other thing that I would just note real quick is that there's a lot of teams that are going to be significantly worse this year in the conference. You know, Iowa's going to take a huge hit. Illinois is going to take a huge hit. Rutgers is going to take a huge hit.
Wisconsin.
I don't know which one of those like 28-year-olds that they had on that team last year is going to end up coming back, but they're probably going to end up taking a huge hit next year too. Although I don't think Wisconsin was all that good to begin with. I don't know if I can say that to Wisconsin fans. Like they already don't like me, but I think that the middle of the league, like what made the Big Ten so tough the last couple of years is that the 10th best team was probably just about as good as like the third or fourth best team. And I don't think you're going to see that this season. I think there's going to be a very, a much clearer hierarchy in the conference this year. And that's probably good for a team like Indiana. That's kind of projecting for somewhere in the middle. You're not going to have as many teams that are going to be below you in the standings that can beat you.
Yeah. As we're talking about this, the guys on the Three Man Weave podcast, they've been kind of breaking down leagues, over the course of the last few weeks. So the Big Ten was up this week. So listen to that today. So might be give people at least some idea of who's out there right now and some other thoughts on how the conference might shake out. So last question before we take a break, Rob. So proposed rule changes, any that really stood out to you as I'd love to see this one, or this one is the dumbest thing I've ever heard?
Well, I would love to see them ban the charge. That's kind of I think that's my brand at this point. I don't know. IPAs and banning the charge, like that, I think that's what my brand is at this point.
It's a strong platform. I think it's good.
Yeah, right? If I ever run for president, that's what I'm going to be running for.
You got my vote.
Beyond that, you know, I think I want to see us go to four quarters. It just the I don't know how much of the women's game you guys watch, but the product, the flow, the fact that you don't have these like TV timeouts, 10 seconds of play, TV timeout thing going on, is just way, way better. I don't think that's ever going to happen. I mean, we talked with Matt Norlander about it the other day, and it just – the TV contracts is just, we don't need to go down that rabbit hole right now. The other thing that I think would be kind of overrated in terms of how beneficial it would be is six fouls. I get why people want to do it. And I understand the fact that like college officiating is bad enough where you want to be able to give them that leeway that you don't foul people out. But I think the bigger thing is to kind of teach some of these coaches that like you don't need to auto bench your guy with two fouls in the first half. Like you're better off playing him and trusting that he's not going to be committing too many fouls. So the one thing that I really do like, and if we're not going to go to four quarters, resetting the fouls at 10 minutes in the first half and 10 minutes in the second half so that you don't end up having 13 minutes of a half where you're going to the free throw line every time that there's a touch foul called by an over aggressive referee, I think is something that would be really, really good for us. Cause there's nothing worse in a game that gets a little bit too physical and ends up being nothing but a free throw shooting contest. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. The whole, all the conversation around the foul thing with the, oh, you can commit this many, but if you do this many in a certain half, like that to me is just bonkers.
We can't even keep track of stuff right now. Like you're going to ask refs to have to be able to concentrate on this guy can commit four fouls in the second half, but this guy can only commit three fouls. It's going to be a disaster. Please.
Yeah.
Please do not put that
The in. Monitor review is going to be supplanted by the trip to the scorer's table to figure out how many fouls a guy had in a half. So we don't need that. That was the one that I was like, I'm all for. If you want to give him more fouls, just give him more fouls. We don't need to make it more complicated than it is. If you want to foul six times in the first half or six times in the second half, I don't care. Use your six however you want. But I agree with the 10 minute at a minimum, the 10 minute reset of the fouls. Just, I mean, as you said about the women's game, even if you're not going to switch to quarters, the parade to the free throw line that really slows down the flow of some of these games, not to mention the fact of how IU shot free throws the last few years would have been, you might as well just take your chances in a half court setting, even though there were times that wasn't too pretty either. But some of that stuff I wouldn't mind seeing. Coach, any of these, I don't remember if you guys talked about these too much in the last couple of weeks, but
no, I do like the quarters. I love the quarters idea. Obviously high school guy, we play quarters and I do like the fouls being reset and shooting two free throws because a foul is a negative defensive move. It shouldn't be with the bonus for, two or three free throws. You get the guy missing the front end and I know step up and hit him, but I'd like to see the two foul shots after five in each 10 minutes. The one I don't like, and specifically it just irks me to no end, is they want to take timeouts away from coaches at the last 2 or 3 minutes. Well, you got all the TV timeouts, and I understand money drives everything, and you need money in the game, and it's never going to change. But people are, saying the length of the games slow down because the coaches take timeout. Well, get Bo Borowski off the replay. That would help an awful lot. Please, they go to the monitor or have a rule where the call stands, you have a minute. Yes, we want to be fair to take a look at it, but these replays that give free timeouts to coaches. The other thing I would say is when you do watch a replay, the team can't meet with the coach. The team's got to stand. One official stands at half court, one on this end, and one team on this end away from the coach because it gives an advantage to a team that's out of timeouts to go replay something at the very end. The game of basketball is pure, and you don't take away the skill of coaching and playing to shorten a game so you can keep making, Bo Borowski look good and, get TV time and also for your money. And I do understand it. I know I'm old as crap and I'm a traditionalist, but you can't take my timeouts away. I want to win a basketball game and you're selling, whatever you're selling on your ads, I get it, but I want to win a basketball game. You're going to fire me. You got to give me a chance to call a timeout and, there's only five right now, and you have to have a use it, lose it timeout anyway. That to me is ridiculous, and I'll just let it slide right there.
The one thing I would say to that is it would incentivize using those timeouts earlier in the game, which would kind of eliminate the need for some of these extended TV timeouts. And I think that might actually be a good thing. If you look at the NBA, you got to use a timeout in specific time frames in the NBA, and that kind of spaces out when you get the TV timeouts, which kind of improves the flow a little bit. But you're 100% right about the monitor reviews. Like, can we just, there's got to be a way that we can limit the amount of time that we have these referees staring at these little tablets on the sideline. Like, you don't need to spend 6 minutes of a 9-point game with 50 seconds left trying to figure out if it's 50.2 or 50.1 seconds left on the, you just don't need to do that. It doesn't matter, right? Like, I understand if you might need to take a little bit more time to determine if a game-winning shot was released right at the buzzer. Okay, look, you want to do that? Go ahead, take 5 minutes to do that one. But if you're trying to add like 0.4 seconds back on the clock in a two possession game we don't need to do that, right? You don't need to do that every single time. Yeah, trust the scorekeepers.
Yeah. Or if you need 5 minutes to see if it might have grazed the fingertip of somebody's pinky and you have to go back over it. Like, I agree with Coach. Like, there's a certain amount, like, if you haven't figured, it's no different than NFL, right? Like, if you haven't figured it out in a certain amount of time, like, you ain't going to figure it out. So just move on.
Yeah. Call stands.
Well, and it's ridiculous too, because in any late game situation, that ball goes through the net. There's some human error. It might be 0.2, 0.1, but only go review a time situation if the clock is running when it should have been stopped and it goes 3, 4, 5 seconds. That's a timing error you need to fix. Get your stopwatch out, get it done, you're done. But this stuff about, oh, the ball went through the net and it was, you know, 3.7, now it's 3.6. And I get it, the games are on the line and everything matters. But that kills more than the timeouts. That kills the flow of the end of game in college basketball, in my opinion. And then I hear that they want to – that's why I get so upset with the timeouts, is they taking away a piece of the game because they can't – you know, adjudicate the game. I just used a big word, Andy. Ooh, you might want to get that on a drop. That's way above my pay grade.
Nice. All right. Well, that'll do it for segment two. And when we come back, we'll answer your questions and do some subscriber shout outs. So stick with us here on the Assembly Call.
This Halloween.
No, that's impossible.
Don't get caught.
Did you check the basement or the bedroom?
Without the perfect thing.
They're both out.
To treat every taste.
Well, that's it. We're out of Fanta.
No!
This Halloween, don't live with the horror of being without Fanta. Get yours today.
I will say one thing about using timeouts at the end of a game. I think I don't remember if it was this year or last year when I was coaching my daughter's game. It was at the end of the game and I had a timeout left. I typically will use however many I get, which isn't very many, but we had like put it in a sideline out of bounds play. And I just wanted to like, the ball happened to go out of bounds. I was like, I'm just going to call him over, call timeout. We'll go over it again. Let's just see if we can run it. But it was not winning or losing us the game. I called this timeout. If this referee could have walked over and stabbed me, he would have. He was just like, he was so pissed. And then I'm pretty sure we didn't run the play correctly, and it was a total waste of everyone's time. But it was, I was like, well, this is a teaching moment. That's what we're here for. So you're in third or fourth grade. Don't get too mad about it. You got your money to ref the game. You can hang out for another couple minutes while we figure this out. But anyway. Rob, I don't know if you got to go or you want to stick around a little bit. It's totally up to you. I don't know what Jared told you. So we got, they're all IU-centric questions, obviously. So you can hop in on them if you want. But if not.
Yeah, we got like, can we wrap it in like 10 minutes?
I'll tell you what. I will watch the clock and I'll kind of, when it gets to be like 10:15, I'll kind of let you go. But we'll thank you for coming and all that stuff. So we'll get through. We'll at least hit a few of the questions. Coach and I can knock out the rest after that. Or we'll save a couple. I know Coach and Chad did some in the community this week, so we'll go at it that way. But like I said, I didn't want to get started and then leave you no easy way to exit. So we'll hit a couple. I'll try to hit the ones that'd be good to get your perspective on. We'll go from there.
All right, perfect.
This is Jordan Halls, and I never miss a shot or an episode of The Assembly Call.
And welcome back to The Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Coach Tonsoni and our guest Rob Doster, and it's segment three, which can only mean one thing. can only mean that I need to figure out if I actually have this intro song here, and apparently I do. All right, so the first subscriber shout-out this week comes to us from Greenwood, Indiana, the home of Trace Jackson Davis, and it's Tyler Asher. Tyler's favorite Hoosier is Victor Oladipo, and his assembly call leader is Coach. Tyler wrote, "I love the few tailgates I've gotten to go to. It's such a fun environment. Michigan game tailgate 2 years ago in the freezing cold was great. Coach may have had one too many, or more than one too many, as the story goes." This is not Tyler's words. I did add that part in. And it was a sight to see. I do believe that. Can't wait for this year's tailgates with so much excitement around the football and basketball programs. Keep up the great work, guys. So thanks to you, Tyler. And the second one comes to us from Carmel, Indiana, home of Zach McRoberts and Todd Patton. Todd's favorite Hoosier is Ray Tolbert. For his assembly call leader is Andy. For his after radio recording rants. And Todd has a special acknowledgement for his grandma and grandpa Rainford. Hopefully I didn't say that last name wrong. For instilling their love of Indiana in our family and generations of ancestors who cut limestone for the university. So thank you again to Tyler and Todd. And now it's time for our mailbag. All questions submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join at assemblycall.com/community. And we did get one of these, so we might as well lead off with...
It's not that good, but it's not that bad. It's Jay's mediocre question.
I will say, Rob, in the years since I did the podcast where we would stop and have to like edit stuff on the fly, I have really gotten better at adding some production value to the show. So there has been some change along the way. All right. So the mediocre question, as always, comes from Jay. What is the one thing about IU basketball that surprised you the most since Mike Woodson was hired, and the one thing that surprised you the least? Rob, thoughts on you know, maybe something that you've been surprised by, or how your initial reaction to the Woodson hire may have changed over the course of time since he's been named the IU coach?
Well, I mean, I like the hire more than I think kind of the general national consensus. It makes a lot of sense to me in terms of just reconnecting with the Indiana family, reconnecting with the fan base, and bringing in a guy that just knows how to coach ball. The thing that probably, I guess, surprised me the most was just the Thad Mata bringing him in. Like that to me, like just kind of came out of left field a little bit. And like I said before, like I think that that's something that would makes a lot of sense. Just having another basketball mind in there, somebody that really understands like what it takes to be able to do the things that you need to do to be a college basketball coach. Because you're basically a CEO, right? You're running a program. You're not coaching a team. And I think that that's the biggest difference between college and the NBA. So the Thad Mata thing was something where I was like, oh, wow, look at that. Okay, yeah, that's a good idea. That was smart. That was sharp. That was sharp.
Coach, what about you? What's something that's maybe surprised you or has changed your opinion since Woodson initially got brought in?
Well, the surprise, I started liking it a little bit more than I did when I first. But the Thad Mata thing did immediately give me a little bit of pause. But I guess not surprised, just he's been successful. Everything he's done. And I think we talked about it earlier. There has been nothing that has really been a negative. I guess some people might clamor that was Jerome Hunter dismissed or pushed away in order to get the 7-footer, and some people may have issues with that, but everything that he's done, has been really, I think, good for Indiana basketball so far. And so there's a level of trust with me, not that it's that important. That's been a little surprising to some extent, I guess. And one thing that hasn't surprised me is how we're starting to come back together. And I underestimated the value of that. Woodson and Fife coming back have really brought a lot of people back to enjoying Indiana basketball. And that's nothing but positive.
All right. Next one comes from, I believe this is Bob Thompson, the great Bob Thompson, who does the music for the show. I asked this close to a year ago, hearing a lot of hype about depth and how can we keep everybody happy with minutes. I've heard this for years on end, yet don't recall a deep Hoosier team since Yogi's final season. So tell me, should I believe in the hype? I guess, Rob, part of this I'm interested to get your thoughts on, because I think we've touched on, you know, what your thoughts are about the IU team. But, you know, where do you come down on some of this, where you look at all these newcomers that IU's brought in, they've got, and the returning players? Do you think it's a legitimate concern of how do you have enough minutes to keep everybody happy in this scenario, or for a team that hasn't performed very well, Does that really matter all that much? Where do you kind of come down on that? I guess maybe in general, but more specifically with what IU's got on the roster right now.
I've always considered depth to be overrated. I think the sweet spot for a college basketball program is to have seven guys that you really want in your rotation with an eighth guy and a ninth guy that are good enough to be able to give you minutes if someone gets hurt, if someone sprains an ankle, if someone's in foul trouble, if someone gets suspended for three games, whatever it is. So I think Indiana has the right number of bodies. I think that it's a little overrated saying you got to be able to keep these guys happy with playing time and with minutes. And you know what? If you're not happy because you're not getting minutes, like, go be better in practice. Like, earn your minutes. This is Indiana. You should not be gifted minutes at Indiana for Indiana basketball. So if you're not playing, like, I've just never bought into the idea that that's something where a player can complain about that. Because if you're good enough, the coach is going to put you on the floor. If you're doing it in practice, the coach is going to put you on the floor. Like, he's not coaching to lose games. He's coaching to win games. And if you're not getting in the lineup, then you're not doing something right in practice. Maybe you don't know the plays, whatever it is, right? So I've never bought into the idea that you got to be able to keep people happy and give them enough minutes to give them happy. Because if you're not happy, go and earn your minutes. That's all you got to do. You know, kick someone's butt in practice, and you're going to be playing over them. It's that simple.
Well said. And there's a lack of patience in society today too, that everyone wants to come in and play right away. There are spots available on a 13-man roster for guys to come in that are young, get some practice minute, get a little run in your bye games or in a game that's out of hand, and develop as a freshman and play a little more as a sophomore, and then really be a contributor junior and senior year. There are some players that aren't going to go to the NBA after a year or two that are going to be good four-year players, so have some patience. It's really hard. I get that in today's society, but I think that the 7-8, and you want to play your best players. One of my complaints is trying to keep players happy, and you play 11-man rotation, and there's no flow between your best players. You look at teams, and they're generally got eight guys that are getting their minutes, and the eighth guy is getting 12, 13 minutes. You want to play your good guys close to 30 minutes or more. Otherwise, you don't have any good guys, in my opinion. So, I'm all for running your best out there and having players available in case of emergency. But 8 or 9 is what the rotation should be if you're really gonna win, in my opinion. Playing more than that, Archie tried to do that one year. Tried to play 11. It just seemed like there was no rhythm or flow to the guys. You know, it's not hockey, you know, where you got massive changes every line shift.
To me, playing 11 suggests that you haven't figured out, you're just trying to figure stuff out on the fly as opposed to anything else. But we'll see. So, Rob, I know you got to run. Really appreciate you coming on. It was great catching up with you on IU basketball and a little family stuff beforehand. So hope you and the family are doing well, and hopefully your 2-year-old's case of the terrible twos is a short lived one, and things can get back to normal for you.
There's two things I want in this world: for the terrible twos to go away, and for Bo Borowski to get the hell away from the monitor. That's all I need in this life.
Hey, all right. Rob, thanks. I learned when to follow your betting advice and when to fade your advice, you know, in listening to you every day on your betting stuff. But I do appreciate what you and Goodman put out. It's good for the commute. So thanks for that, and thanks for being on our show tonight.
Yeah awesome, Rob. Really appreciate it. Guys.
Our first podcast since 2012, Andy.
I know. It's been a while. It has been a while. Been a long All right. Time. Thanks, man. I really appreciate you coming on, buddy.
Later, guys.
All right. Take care. All right. Coach, we'll knock out a few of these others. Although I think as I read through a few of these, we've hit on a number of these. Here was Jeff had wanted rule changes, but I think we touched on that one. Talked a little about Michael Durr and dividing up minutes. And I guess we touched on this a little bit. Brian had a question. I don't think this is you. With Durr in the mix, is it possible Trace gets some serious time at the four? How does he fit in at the four if his 3-point shot isn't dropping? How do you assess the addition of Durr? I know we talked a little bit about, can Trace step out and shoot, and that remains to be seen. So that's a little bit of an unknown, makes the question somewhat tough to answer. But as you think about that, is it really an either or proposition with Durr and TJD, or do you see situations where they might be able to play together?
I love this question. Obviously, it's from a good guy. It wasn't me, but Brian's are all good. This is interesting to me, and I was just, you know, yes, a lot of people were clamoring to get another big man, and I thought with Logan Duncan, we had enough, and I can't stress enough where I like guards, even as a tall person myself, it's a guards game, and my concern, I've stated it tonight, is at that four. Do I see Durer and Trace playing together at some time? Yes, I do. In some of the brief little videos we've seen Trace Jackson Davis shooting a lot from the outside. I think that's an emphasis that Coach Woodson's trying to do, is develop his outside game, and I think he's going to be encouraged to take some shots from there. I don't think Indiana's better with Trace Jackson Davis at the four playing out on the perimeter. I don't think Indiana's better. Trace Jackson Davis may be better and look better for the pros if he can show what he's doing. But Randall L was a wide receiver one time because they wanted to showcase him for the NFL, and Indiana didn't play well until they moved him back to the quarterback. So I trust the coaching staff to do what's best for Indiana. I just think, Andy, we have four centers on the team now that their best spot is on the block or screen and roll into the post, catching 12 footers, shooting 12 footers, floaters in the lane. And that's Race, and that's TJD, and that's Durr, and that's Logan Duncan. We have four centers. And there's not enough time to play all four of them. And part of the problem in the last couple of years is Archie tried to play two big guys. And we discussed that earlier on the show, is that sometimes that matchup has to be there. If you're playing another team and you need to guard some, give Trace Jackson Davis some rest in guarding the five, I understand that. But I want to see, personally, I'm thinking the way I've seen it, personally want that combination to get minimal minutes, because I just don't see that being what Indiana needs. I think we can take advantage of how good Trace Jackson Davis is by, you know, moving him some and letting him shoot some, but more of about he's the five and the four guys around him are doing some perimeter things. So I think it's a real good question, and it's just something we've got to watch. And even though I made that comment, you know, Coach Woodson's not going to do anything to lose games. He's not here to lose games. So he'll figure that out as best as he possibly can.
All right. I think that is the last of the questions that we haven't got to. There was a recruiting one that I don't feel like I am in any way able to answer, so we won't. But perhaps some research can be done on that. It's been a little bit hard, in all honesty, to get a real feel for some of the recruiting stuff, just because coaches haven't been able to be out at events, and it just has been all that has been so much different in this day and age that I'm not really sure you have the same level of feel that you have for who IU is interested in at that point. You know, this year you've kind of filled up this year's class. I think they can now start to move on to that. The other thing is, you know, Woodson initially coming in, while you've got to have some eyes on the future of what that is, and it sounds like they talked to CJ Gunn and at least talked through that part since he had committed. But I think in general, his immediate focus was and had to be, how do you, you know, what are you going to, what's this year's roster going to look like? How do you get that ready? And then I think they can move on to that from now. And I think that's where Roseman, I think that was in the interview with the Hoosier Hysterics, I believe, had been able to, you know, to talk about, he was a guy who had been able to be out and see players given what he was doing at the time. So I think that's helpful. Fife obviously had been doing some of that recruiting for Michigan State. So I think they've got guys who are already down the road of doing that. Kenya Hunter, even for IU, had been looking at guys, but I don't know the specific names, I guess. So that's as good as I can do to answer that question at this point.
Yeah, the thing is, they're going after some talented guys. I know they're going after three or four big guys. I read every once in a while who's got an offer and so forth. But I said this last week, Andy, I am more interested when it gets a little bit more heated. They're down to three. You know, they pick, limit their school to three or four. I'll read up, watch some film. I've just found myself getting too excited and then knowing that some of these guys are going to make honest decisions to go elsewhere. And so I'm more concerned once they've signed or committed, or committed first and then signed, to understand what they're going to mean for basketball. I personally just don't get overly hyped about recruiting. I want it to go well, and I want us to get good talent, but I don't spend a lot of time reading and researching that to feel comfortable, you know, throwing out who's at the top of the list and everything.
Yep. All right. I agree. Well, with that, that will do it for this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Special thanks to Bob Thompson for producing a lot of the music that you hear on the show. And thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again next week or sooner if any news breaks. Until then.
Take it from me, Robert Johnson. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
I like everything about that.
All right. I do not know. I'm sure people will be clamoring for AC After Dark given the new sponsorship. But
hey, Andy, I think I hear Mrs. Tonsoni calling. Hey, Coach Tonsoni, here I come.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Perfect.
There you go.
Perfect. So how you got?
For sure that was going to start last week when I had the boys on here.
Oh man, that would have been amazing. That would have been absolutely amazing. I think both of us probably had the same thought that you knew it would be a week that one or the other was hosting. So that was one of the reasons, even though I was like super busy and got down here like 2 minutes before, I was like, I'm not going to hang Coach out to dry for the first time of that. So anyway, but no, it's good. In all seriousness, they do a lot of great things around testicular cancer and things like that. So it's a good good company, and so one that we were glad to bring on. But you almost done with school the school year. When you guys finish up?
That's last student day is next Thursday, and seniors are on a trip Wednesday and just have to show up for practice and stuff on or Wednesday and Thursday. So I have seniors done that Tuesday, and then I'm done next Friday. So
nice.
Then basketball kicks in 4 days in the morning, 6:30 workouts, and it's 40-minute drive. So it's 5:15. But I tell you what, Andy, there's nothing better. I get up early, you know, throw some hot water on my face and throw a sweatshirt on, go to the gas station, get a coffee, and then go in and coach. And then come home about 11 o'clock, start my day, grab a shower and a nap. And if I could do that every day for a living, that would be good stuff. So I don't mind doing that in the summer.
That doesn't sound so bad. That does not sound so bad at all. Yeah.
I tell you, we've had, it's just fun when you get things going right. And I hope this happens with Coach Woodson. You know, we've had 6 o'clock morning workouts, in the spring when we were allowed to, and we had 27 guys from seventh grade to varsity guys, almost every 25 or more. Wow, every awesome. Time at 6 a.m. Going through workouts and skill development and things like that. And you know, we have a lot of multi-sport athletes, so some of our better athletes aren't able to come to those because they're playing spring sports. It's just, you know, I don't know how good we'll be. We lost some really talented seniors that played for us for 3 and 4 years. So we got a lot to replace, but it's sure fun when kids are hungry and want to work, and you know, there's no discipline issues. So.
Yep. I would agree with that. So, all right. Well, I think that'll do it, everybody. Thanks for joining us as always. Some combination of us will be here next Thursday. But it was good. Good to get Rob's perspective on
good IU. Show.
Somebody who's not, doesn't have the same. It was funny when he was like, I don't know who would see them as top five. I was like, I know a whole bunch of people that do. But I think it was good, and it'll be interesting to see how all some of these decisions shake out in the Big Ten and how that's going. But I think feels like those top three, and then you got a group of teams in the middle. But I do agree with what he said. If I don't think the slog from, you know, 4 to 10 or 4 to 11 that the last few years have been will be there, at least doesn't seem that way.
So, nope.
Anyway. All right.
All right, cool. Everybody.
Everybody take care. And appreciate those in the chat. I'm not really sure what motivates a person to go on and badmouth everybody when you could just not go on to something that apparently you don't believe everyone's opinions of. Yeah,
I missed it.
I saw it, but I don't think I was logged into the right stuff to do anything about it, but I know somebody did. So appreciate you guys doing that. Appreciate the comments in the chat just in terms of the positivity and all that stuff. I just, you know, if there's something that I don't like or somebody's opinion that I don't agree with, I just don't listen to or watch that thing. It's really not that hard. So anyway, all right. Well, cool. Coach, good talking to you. Good luck with the last little bit of school here and everybody else out there. Take care. And we will talk to everybody next week.
Every day, thousands of hackers try to steal your crypto. But Arculus uses air-gapped technology by forming a protective barrier that insulates you from hackers and secures your crypto. Order yours at getarculus.com.